All right, we have been talking about all the feasts that the Israelites observed. Oh, I think I need to buy a new eraser. Okay, the blue one's not looking good. What'd you do, Dean? Did you do something to these? Oh, there we go. We've talked about several of them, right? Anybody have any remembrances of any of them? You want to name one of them?
Passover.
Okay. Okay. Remember, these two were kind of one right after another, right? And I heard another one, Pentecost. Okay. Some of the other ones?
Trumpets.
Okay. Trumpets.
First fruits.
First fruits, right? Remember any others?
Tabernacles.
Tabernacles or booths, that's right. Where they lived in booths to commemorate that time when God basically took care of them in the wilderness. Okay. We also talked about the Day of Atonement, which wasn't technically a feast, but it was still a special day. Talked about Sabbaths as well, back toward the beginning. These are all very much commanded in the Law of Moses about what they were to do, the sacrifices, how long it's going to last, so forth. The last two feasts are days that are not specifically commanded by God. One happened during the days of Esther, which we'll read about in a minute, which was late in the history of Israel. The other one actually is not even mentioned in the Bible, period, as far as the time, and that was in between the time of Malachi and Matthew. And we'll talk about that one in a little bit as well. So, let's talk about the first one. Wow, what has happened to that? Thought this was going to work. All right. This one, Feast of Purim, the plural, the Hebrew plural of pur, which has to do with lots. This is one that takes place during the days of Esther. Okay, this is when Persia was the world empire. Okay. They were the rulers, the days of Cyrus and Darius and some of the other kings of Persia. So the book of Esther takes place during that time period. And Esther is kind of very different than all the other books in the Bible. Does anybody remember why one of the things that's really odd about Esther?
God's not mentioned.
I mean, all the other books talk about the Lord said this or the Lord did that or something about God or something about Jehovah. But God's name is specifically not mentioned. Now, certainly the idea of God is in the book, but it's not specifically. It's the only book that's like that in the whole Bible. It also is kind of odd. You know, it takes place in Persia in one of the in the court of King Ahasuerus, one of the kings of Persia. And there's three main I guess characters is what you would call it, in the book. There is Esther. There's Haman. And Mordecai. Those are really the three main characters. And it kind of reads like a movie plot or something. It's really kind of like that, because there's all kinds of action in the story. But he begins with Esther becoming the queen. Okay, she becomes the queen. She's kind of picked out of a whole group. And the one thing probably that is most prominent in the whole book is the providence of God. Even though God's name isn't specifically mentioned in the book, yet the idea of Him working behind the scenes to bring about the desired result is seen in every chapter. So Esther becomes queen. Does anybody remember what was unusual about Esther becoming a queen? Because what is Esther? She's a Jew, right?
She didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, that's right. And she didn't tell anybody she was a Jew, right? So that was kind of unusual, all right? So there, that's in the very beginning of the book. She becomes the queen and obviously has, you know, some influence. But in Persia, especially at that time, you know, it was a very male-dominated society. And even the queen had very specific rules and regulations about what she could or couldn't do as far as being in the king's presence. Well, another one of the main characters is Haman. A bad guy, all right? He was the bad guy in the plot, okay? He becomes angry with somebody. Does anybody remember who? Yeah, the third one, right? Mordecai. He becomes very angry with Mordecai. Mordecai is also a Jew. And Haman doesn't like Mordecai. Actually hates Mordecai, right? Not just doesn't like, actually hates Mordecai. And do you remember what happened that really ticked him off?
Because he wouldn't bow down.
Wouldn't bow down to Haman. Mordecai wouldn't bow down. And oh my, that was like the straw right there. And so Mordecai, or Haman, is like a right-hand man to the king. And so he starts plotting some way to kill the Jews. So he's mad at not just Mordecai, he just gets mad at all of them. And so he comes up with a plot, he thinks, to get the Jews killed, massacred, whatever you want to call it. It kind of backfires on him, but he's plotting, okay? So there's our bad guy, there's the evil mastermind behind the plot, trying to get the Jews killed. Anybody remember what happens next? How does he get the king to go along with him? David, you remember?
He makes him think that the Jews are like a main enemy.
Okay. Convinces the king that Jews need to be eliminated. They're all bad. They're his enemies, and they're a terrible group of people. Let's see. I think that's in, if you're in the book of Esther, chapter 3, verse 8. And if someone wants to read that for us, that'd be great. Chapter 3, verse 8.
Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other people, and they do not keep the king's law. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain."
Okay, so that's what he thought. Okay, so that's how he was going to get back at Mordecai and then all the other Jews, was to convince the king of that. And so he had the king make this decree, right, that they could go out into the lands and kill the Jewish people. All right. Now, what does the king discover about Mordecai? Do you remember that part, David?
That Mordecai had discovered a plot to assassinate the king.
Yeah, earlier in back in time, right? Mordecai had uncovered this plot and the plot was to kill the king. Well, Mordecai had stopped the plot, but he had never really been rewarded for it. So the king says, you know, we need to reward Mordecai for what he's done. And of course, he has no idea, the king does, that Haman hates this Mordecai. He doesn't know that, okay? He's never brought that to his attention. So what does Haman build during this time to kill Mordecai with? Gallows, right? Big old tall gallows to hang Mordecai with. And oh, he's just so happy about it. You can just, as you read the book of Esther, you can just see how happy he is. He's going to get to hang his arch enemy. Okay? Oh, yes. No, they've been around like this for a long time, CL. Boy, that's true. The plots that go in behind and the deceptions and trying to get revenge and all of that stuff. Yeah, that certainly has been going around for a long, long time. So Haman and the king have a conversation. And the king asks Haman, well, how should we reward a man that's done such great things for the kingdom? Well, Haman thinks he's talking about him. He says, oh, I think we need to bring him in on a horse and put a robe on him and a crown and all this stuff, thinking that he's going to do it for himself. You know, he thinks of himself pretty highly, apparently.
Around and say, this is what they do for the king. For someone who really wants to honor.
That's right. Yes,
see,
yeah. Okay, so it's quite a plot. It really is. So the king is talking about Mordecai. Haman thinks he's talking about himself. So what happens when Haman finds out that it's not meant for him? It's meant for Mordecai.
He goes home with his head
hidden
after it.
Yeah, kind of his tail between his legs type of thing. Okay, and what else happens? What happens kind of next? What's the next main thing that happens in the story? I don't remember what chapter it's in.
Esther goes to the king.
Okay. What does Esther want?
The Jews to be saved.
Okay. To save the Jews. All right. And what happens to Haman here? Now, remember, the gallows are still up, right? The gallows are still
up. That's
right. That's right.
For him and the king.
Yeah, big banquet, big feast, okay, I guess in the big palace hall or something, okay. What happens there, remember? What happens at this feast, or what's the result of it, maybe?
She reveals that she's a Jew.
Okay.
Now.
What else? Or what's the result of this? What's the...
Haman gets hung at his own gallows.
Well, okay, ultimately...
Yeah.
Okay, and that's ultimately where it goes, right? There's a complete 180 degree plot twist, isn't there? Haman has gone to enormous extent to make sure Mordecai is hung on those gallows because Mordecai had the nerve not to bow down to him. So all of this revenge and this plotting. How does the king find out about Haman? Or how does that happen so that Haman ends up?
Well, the king comes back, had gone.
Okay.
He left Haman there with Esther. And Haman's begging for his life.
That's right.
And the king comes in and thinks he's trying to...
That's right. Exactly. They think there's something between them, right? Exactly. King doesn't appreciate that very much. Okay. And so then, I don't know, chapter 8 maybe, or I don't remember what chapter, where Haman ends up getting hung on his own gallows. Okay, end of 7. And There's more to this story because the Jewish people, that decree to kill the Jewish people is rescinded, right? And now no one has the right to do that.
No. Once the law is passed, it cannot be changed.
Okay, so what ends up happening?
Another law is passed saying the Jews can defend themselves.
That's right. The Jews can defend themselves. So let's go to chapter 9. This is where the feast comes from, chapter 9. And this is why this feast is still celebrated today with the Jewish people. Hey, let's notice the dates. Chapter 9, verse 1. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. Now the next several verses talk about all the people involved and who the Jewish people ended up killing and how many they killed and where those people were. Let's see. Verse 17. Okay, verse 16. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies. But they did not lay a hand on the plunder. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day of the month, they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. That's where the feast comes from. The Feast of Purim. And here, in a minute, we'll see why it's called that. Therefore, the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled town celebrated the 14th day of the month of Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday and for sending presents to one another, which they still do. So it says, and Mordecai wrote these things and sent letters to all the Jews near and far who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to establish among them that they should celebrate yearly the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar. That's when the Feast of Purim is celebrated nowadays. That is somewhere in the February-March range. In this year, that day falls on, got it somewhere, March the 9th, at sunset of March the 9th. That's when the Feast of Purim this year is celebrated. It's like a lot of the days, you know, it changes as far as when it falls. But this year it's going to be, like it starts at 6 o'clock, March the 9th, the evening of March the 9th. Okay. 22, as the days on which the Jews had rest from their enemies, as the month which was turned from sorrow to joy and from mourning to a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, of sending presents to one another and gifts to the poor. Verse 26, skip down. So they call these days Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter and what had happened to them. Now, where did the word, now, the Pur and the Purim, that has to do with lots, right? That's what the word basically means. Well, what does that have to do with the story? Anybody remember? What the idea of lots, casting lots, have to do with the story? And I didn't write down the verse, which I should have.
They cast lots to kill them.
Okay, there was a casting of lots by, who did that?
Haman.
Yeah, Haman, right? Haman was one that cast lots. And so that's, it came back and killed him, basically. His whole plot did. So this Feast of Purim is still celebrated by Jewish people each year, and it is it's just a big happy feast time. I mean, they eat and they make particular little, I've even got the recipe for it in here if you'd like it, to make little kind of dessert sort of things that have, you can put different types of fruit fillings in them, and they're made in kind of the shape of a three-dimensional tri-cornered hat. Reminded me something of like some of the soldiers wore back during Revolutionary War. Looks kind of like that. The idea is that's what they think the crown that was worn looked like, the headdress. I have no idea where they get that, but they make these cookies or these little desserts in that shape. And they do them every year on this Feast of Purim. And they give presents, like was mentioned there in Esther 9. They give presents to one another. They give food to other people. You know, it's a big time of feasting and partying and being happy because of what happened to them during the days of Esther. But you notice it never said God did any of that. They kind of decided on their own to make that feast. So that was never a feast that God required, you know, the male Jews to go and observe or anything like that. The Jewish people just did that, you might say, on their own. Today, on this Feast of Purim, the whole book of Esther is read, start to finish. And typically, when they get to Haman, the people boo. And when they get the word, when someone says Mordecai, they cheer, clap. Kind of like a play, sort of, you know, when the bad guy comes on, you know, with the black hat, everybody boos. Well, that's what they do today when the people read the book of Esther on this particular feast. Okay, and then the last one. Quickly, let me see if I can erase a little bit of this. Goes by several names. Sometimes it's called the Feast of Dedication. Sometimes it's called the Feast of Lights. Sometimes people today call it Hanukkah. And that's really not what it's supposed to be called. It actually is supposed to be with the C-H-A-N-A-K-U-H, I think. And I think it's actually supposed to be a hard C-H, like K, like Hanukkah. But I don't know how to talk like that, so I won't even try. But, yeah, and I can't do that, okay? I can sound funny, but it's not by doing that. So this is the one that's celebrated around Christmas time, okay, in that region, either toward the end of November toward, or beginning of December in that period. And this commemorates, I don't have any idea how to spell that, but that's close enough, commemorates the dedication of the temple in, I think it was 164 BC. So see, this is in between, this is after the time of Malachi and before the time of John the Baptist and Christ. This is the time of the Maccabees. This is what this feast is all about. It's about during that time, the Israelite or Jewish people really weren't Israelites then, but the Jewish people were subjugated, I guess is the term, I think they were either crossed, but it was Syrians and maybe part of the Ptolemies from Egypt. I don't remember exactly what all is included in that group, but. In that time period, there was a guy named Antiochus Epiphanes who was the leader of these enemies of the Jewish people. And he had came into the temple and desecrated it. Okay? Did all kinds of things to the temple, offered unclean animals on the altar, and just did everything that the Jewish people would hate him for. Okay? So the Jewish people started a revolt. What it amounted to, and I think there were four of these people, four sons or something, and this is the time of the Maccabees that was brought up, and they basically started a revolt, a rebellion against them, and drove them out. And I think, let me see if I can, I don't remember if that, yeah, 164 B.C., let's see, on the 25th day of the Jewish month of Kislev, 164 B.C., the Maccabees finished cleaning out the temple. So that's where this date comes from. So they had to go through all these, this purification of the temple, rededicated it because it had been totally polluted as far as they were concerned by these pagan, heathen, you know, Gentile people who were never supposed to be in the temple, especially near the altar. So they were, you know, they were cheering and they were glad about all of this that had happened. And so on this date, now is when they celebrate this Hanukkah or whatever they want to call it, the Feast of Dedication. Of course, the dedication comes from this, dedicating the temple. The lights has an interesting story about lighting the temple afterwards, and it sounds kind of bizarre, really. I mean, what I read about it just didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's where the lights come from. Let's see. They celebrate an 8-day festival, you know. So this is 8 days. Christians celebrate one, right? Christmas, one stinking day, and the Jewish people get 8. That's not fair. So 8 days, right? They do this for 8 days to remember this rededication time. Let's see. This is when that, you know, the big thing about lighting the menorah, the candlestick is a big part of this, and there's lots of different things they do in this time period. So, again, of course, this one is definitely not in the Bible. Didn't even happen during the time that any of the Bible was written. Okay, but this is still a big festival. And the one I just talked about, the Feast of Purim and the Feast of Dedication, are probably two of the biggest feast days that the Jewish people today celebrate. Two that weren't commanded by God in the first place, but yet they are the ones that are so important in the Jewish year that they spend you know, a great deal of time and money and effort and energy and so forth doing. And that's pretty much the last of all the feet. Yes, see, yeah. I think so, yes. At least most of them. I think so, yes.
Yep.
Second. I knew there was at least two. And that's where there are a lot of this, well, I'd say a lot. Some of it is in some of Josephus's writings, if I remember right, too. That, of course, he lived a long time later, so his would be second-hand accounts. You know, they wouldn't be eyewitness accounts.
Well, I mean, And most of these feasts, don't they coincide with phases of the moon?
I think some of them do. I don't know about... Well, I don't know that all of them do, but...
You mentioned about March 9th. I'm pretty sure March 9th this year will be full moon. February 9th was full moon, 28 days.
Oh, be another full moon? And that may be it. It may be like the second full moon after some day. You know how some of those things go? Yeah, right. Right. That's right. Yep.
I realize it was the visual, but that is still...
Yeah. Yeah. And this one is actually mentioned in the Bible as in the New Testament. John chapter 10, I think it is. John chapter 10. Verses 22 and 23. Yeah, here it is. John chapter 10, verses 22 and 23 says, "Now it was the Feast of Dedication in Jerusalem, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch." I think that's the only time it's mentioned. So this was a big feast for Jewish people, even in the first century. So, and again, it says it was in winter, so, you know, the November, December thing, time period. Let's see. The menorah that they light has, let's see, and one in the middle. I think there's 9. And then they take, this one is lit, Now you see why I'm not an art major or something. The center one, I'm glad someone thinks so. The center one, then for each of the 8 days, the center one, like the first day, then it'll light one. Then the second day, they'll light another one all the way through the 8 days. So this lighting of the menorah is like a central part of their feast or their remembering this dedication. And that kind of brings it all to a close. But they are important feasts, these two we talked about tonight, for them. They pretty well, you know, follow them, you might say religiously. I guess that's the word. So we'll talk next week, Lord willing, about some other things in the Old Testament that are important, that affect, you know, what we know from the New Testament. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
It's amazing that they're not going out sacrificing all these animals like they did back then, but yet they're still supposed to be the Jews. You know, they're not even following what they're supposed to be following.
Yeah.
Following mankind.
Yeah. That's absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I guess they'll be coming out in a minute, but I've enjoyed studying these feasts in the Old Testament because, you know, so. Not only do people talk about them today, but, you know, Jesus observed many of these feasts, and they had some significance for him and the apostles. Yes.
And